Hey, good afternoon, you. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show, the 14th of March 2024. As always, great to be with you. Please get involved during the programme. Leave a message for me via the website or via the Richie Allen Show app. And a special shout out to my pal Eamon Blaney. How you doing, Eamon? He's been trying to download the app for months. Months, I tell you. And he's managed to do it. I'm only too happy to hear that. Let's do it then, the programme.
Uncensored. Unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, fascinating program, I think, coming your way. I hear you say it better be Baldy. No, it'll be a good program. Loads to talk to. And then a little bit later on in the program, I'm going to be joined by Rob. I'm looking forward to meeting Rob. Rob's a listener who sent me a message about his child and how Rob and his wife's decision not to continue with the vaccine schedule for the child has provoked a response from the NHS, which is very interesting and mildly disturbing. So if you have a child and you're thinking, I don't want my child to have the vaccination schedule, you might want to listen to that. That's coming up a little bit later on in the programme, all right? Yeah, I've got about 2 gallons of water here alongside me. I'm minding my old voice. I've been very lucky the last year or so. It used to be the case that maybe once a year I would lose the voice for about 3 to 4 days. I could only whisper. But I've been very lucky. I do work hard not to be shouting and screaming. So there you are. But anyway, listen, I've sad news to bring you now. And I don't know, I was thinking of a way I could build up to this. I was thinking of how I would go about it, how I would thank people. But this is the final Richie Allen Show ever. I'm finished. The show ends today. And that is because I'm moving into the catering business. This afternoon, I was awarded the catering contract for the Clonay Strand Hotel in Dungarvan, in Waterford. I'll give them a fucking menu. I'll give them a menu, I tell you. I'm jesting, by the way. I'm going nowhere. I'm going nowhere. I'm in the catering business now. I'll give them a menu. Them ungrateful old migrants. There will come a day, and that day will come right soon, when you won't be allowed to say anything. You'll be done. We're going to talk a little bit about that for the next few minutes. I'm looking forward to your messages. Do download the app. If Eamon Blaney can manage it, you can manage it. Eamon's actually a bright guy. He said he had to download 3 virtual private networks before he could eventually download the app. If you're outside the UK and you attempt to download my app, it might tell you the app isn't available in your country. But if you persevere with virtual private networks, and you can get them for free, you'll be able to download it. And it's quite fun having the app. It's quite fun. Because you can send a message in a microsecond to me. All right? Listen, I was joking. Some people hear half the gag. I'm not going anywhere. I didn't really get the catering contract for the Clonay Strand Hotel in West Waterford. I didn't. Wish I did, though. Anyway, hey, listen, before I move on, this coming Sunday is St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. The man who drove the snakes out of Ireland, we could use him again. If only he could rise from the grave, like one of those George Romero movies, St. Patrick, because there are a few snakes in Dáil Éireann. That's a pathetic gag. But anyway, look, it's March 17th, this coming Sunday. Sunday Morning Melodies will be given over to Irish folk and traditional music and stories, raising songs and stories this Sunday. I hope you'll join me for it. I probably won't, because I'll be going running afterwards, but I might have a can or a tin, if you were listening yesterday, a tin of stout during the programme. Let us then, without any further messing, jump straight into the big stories of the day. The extremism definition. Finally, Michael Gove revealed it in all of its glory. The Communities Secretary laid it out in Parliament this afternoon. Pay attention, no matter where you are in the world, because a version of this is already happening in your country, or is already in production. That's a good way of putting it, in your country, okay? So he's laid it out in Parliament this afternoon. The Communities Secretary unveiling a new definition of extremism as, quote, the promotion or advancement of violence, hatred, or intolerance? How do you advance hatred or intolerance? What is hateful or intolerable is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? There are things that we detest, that we hate, and that we find intolerable. Should we not be allowed to discuss them? Well, maybe not, according to Michael Gove. He told the Commons, and here he used something known as parliamentary privilege, where he cannot be sued. You see, he can't be sued for libel. He was in Parliament. He told Parliament that British National Socialist Movement, the British National Socialist Movement and Patriotic Alternative, those groups will be assessed against the new definition. He also said the Muslim Association of Britain, CAGE, and other groups will be held to account to assess if they meet the definition of extremism. He went on to say that Islamism should not be confused with Islam. He said Islam is a great faith. Islamism is a totalitarian ideology. Earlier in the day, and we'll hear some of it now in a moment, he told the BBC the new definition would help the government, quote, choose its friends wisely, end quote. Okay. As I said, let's hear a little bit of what the pipsqueak said. He's a squirrely little dude, Michael Gove. He was everywhere this morning, naturally enough, right, on all broadcast networks. But here he is, BBC Breakfast, speaking to Naga Munchetti on whether free speech would be protected. Here he is, Michael Gove.
One thing I should say is that some people have suggested, and I think it was mentioned in your introduction, that this process will somehow inhibit free speech. Let me be clear, it won't. Organisations and individuals will still be free to argue positions which you or I might find difficult or offensive. We cherish free speech in this country, but when it comes to government funding and government engagement, then government, I think, has to be careful about who it provides funds for or who it provides access for.
Naga?
So they can have free speech?
Yes.
But if you don't like it, you won't fund them anymore?
Yes.
Wow. So the problem is, and nobody has mentioned this today, when Gove says, we think this person or group is an extremist and therefore we will not do business with them, isn't it fair to assume that other service providers will take the lead of the government? Isn't it inevitable, really? And they think we can't see through this. Just think about that. If the government declares a group or a person to be an extremist and therefore that group or person cannot engage with the government, because that's the most important part of it, cannot engage with the government and must not receive public funding, wouldn't that encourage banks, financial service providers, other organisations to also withdraw the offer of service to the person labelled as extremist? That's exactly what's going on. And nobody has mentioned this today. We'll come back to it, maybe. Naga Munchetti, the BBC elfin-like presenter, had a question for Gove about Frank Hester. Frank Hester is the Tory donor who said Diane Abbott should be shot and that she made him want to hate all black women. Naga Munchetti wanted to know, is he an extremist?
When Frank Hester allegedly said that, and I want to get this quote right, I don't hate all black women at all, but I think she should be shot. Is that an extremist view?
Well, speaking as someone who was pursued by an individual who was trying to kill me and who subsequently succeeded in killing one of my friends in Parliament, I take that sort of language very seriously and I think it's unacceptable.
I'm sorry, that's not quite what I asked. Is that an extremist view and would it fall under these new rules, these new definitions of extremism? I can repeat the quote for you if you wish again.
Very important this, because what Frank Hester said is arguably repugnant and silly and maybe nasty, and if you were Diane Abbott you wouldn't like to hear it. But should he be labelled as an extremist and therefore excluded from government contracts or from government funding or even from being able to contact or reach out to engage with his government?
Well, I take these things exceptionally seriously, and because I take them seriously, it would be the case that any assessment about whether or not an individual or an organisation is extremist would have to follow a rigorous process. It wouldn't be me making a decision on the basis of a quote, however horrific. It would be a due diligence process that would be conducted very carefully.
And it would be down to the government of the time, which you are part of, yes?
Sorry?
It would be down to the government of the time, which you are now part of.
It would be down to an appropriate process that would follow independent advice, civil servants who are politically impartial, looking at the evidence, and that evidence being supplemented by academics. But as I say, I take the use or the issuing of these threats very seriously.
It wasn't a threat. He said she should be shot. It's the kind of thing we say. We say it about referees, don't we? Jesus, that referee should be shot. Or if your manager has finally lost the patience of the supporters, he should be shot, that guy. Anyway, this is terribly sinister, isn't it? Peter Tatchell, interesting guy, known for LGBT rights activism, okay, going back to the 1960s. But he would categorise himself as a human rights activist first and foremost. Namely that he's interested in all human rights, regardless of which person is suffering and is in danger of losing their human rights. Anyway, there is no more important human right than the one that says man is free to think and say what he believes, regardless of who doesn't like it. You would agree with this. I would agree with it. It's something I've believed my entire life. Doesn't matter whether I disagree with the person or whether I really, really cannot stand them. It is fundamentally important that he or she is free to think, to hold the opinions they choose and to say what they like, regardless of what I might think about it. Now, Peter Tatchell was on Sky News. You would have thought that a man who proclaims to be, I don't know if he's self-proclaimed, but, you know, this legendary figure in human rights activism, because Tatchell, you know, campaigned against apartheid. He has stood against the genocide in Gaza. You would imagine that Tatchell would agree with you or me, wouldn't you? Think again. Listen to Peter Tatchell speaking after the announcement of Gove's rebranding of extremism. Listen.
This is about ideas, not actions. And as a general rule, people should only face, you know, restrictions based on actions, not on words or ideas.
Yes, of course. Nobody should ever be restricted by any organisation because of their ideas, right? Good man, but...
But we have to remember that the far-right extremist who murdered the MP Joe Cox was primed by far-right ideology. It had been inculcated in him that it was legitimate to target people like Joe Cox. And that resulted in him doing that horrendous deed. So I think that there is a question we have to ask. To what point do ideas actually pave the way for acts that, for example, also led to the terrorist bombings by Islamists in London and other cities? They were also primed by an ideology of Islamism prior to their actions. So it's a complex issue, granted, but we must recognise that there are some ideologies out there that do threaten and menace the rights and freedoms of others.
Some ideologies threaten and menace the rights and freedoms of others. So you could hold dear to yourself a belief or an ideology, and he can determine, Tatchell, that your belief threatens the rights and freedoms of others. It gets worse. Listen carefully.
I would, however, say that these proposals will only restrict government departments and civil servants from engaging with or funding organisations that eventually appear on these lists.
And that's bad enough, isn't it, Peter? It's bad enough that, as Gove has defined it, the organisations deemed to be extremist will not be allowed to engage with the government and won't get government funding, which will in turn encourage private businesses and private citizens to also shun those people named as extremists. This is terrible, right, Peter? No, he thinks it doesn't go far enough.
I am wondering whether that actually goes far enough.
Wow.
There is a case for saying that perhaps these should even be criminal offences.
What?
Now, I agree that is a very tricky one.
Tricky? Tricky. I don't think there's a term that describes it. Authoritarian, totalitarian, fascistic, that somebody's belief could be declared a criminal offence?
Again, it's open to abuse.
You think?
But when you have people who are in communities justifying or glorifying violent terrorism, that is...
Justifying it. So somebody might say, I think Hamas had every right to do what they did on October 7th. I think Palestine is occupied. It's been occupied for decades now. The crimes committed by the Jewish regime, the Israeli regime, not the Jewish regime, the Israeli regime are crimes against humanity. I think Hamas was well within its rights to do what it did. I'm not saying that. I don't believe that. You know I don't believe in violence. But Tatchell wants the justifying of it to be made a criminal offence. Imagine that. Imagine. And imagine that Labour is going to form the next government.
Actually, a process by which some people are led down that path and they end up doing violent acts. So I think we need to be careful, but I think we do need to recognise...
Wait for it.
...that hateful, violent, intolerant ideas...
Hateful, violent, intolerant ideas. Ideas cannot be violent. Hateful, violent, intolerant ideas, right?
Sometimes fuel or create the circumstances that lead people to do terrible deeds.
That is utter nonsense. You know where that leads, don't you? You know where that leads. I mean, we've been talking about this now for 3 years. Excuse me, we've been talking about it for 20 years in some cases, in the case of this broadcaster here. But we've been talking about this in terms of criticising the government's response to pandemics, criticising the crazy rollout of mRNA technology. That could hurt somebody or harm somebody. That ideology, says Tatchell, and that might or ought to be made a criminal offence. Now, of course, I'm not misrepresenting Tatchell. He didn't say anything about vaccines or medicine, but that's exactly where it leads, isn't it? Isn't it exactly where it leads, basically? You know, violent ideas. What's a violent idea? What is a violent idea? I mean, you could think about violence, but if you don't commit violence, well, that's it. That's the end of it, right? But no, they want to criminalise that. And it's horrendous. I'll be reading your comments because they are pouring in a moment. Think about it. Nobody has said this today. Listening to Gove, what this is really about is if the government defines a person or a group as extremist and will not engage in any way with that person, it's basically like saying you're a non-person. Isn't it obvious that financial service providers, full stop, forget about financial, will feel some obligation to also kind of step away from the person. And we've seen this happen before. This isn't new. I mentioned it on the papers this morning. It happened to dozens and dozens and dozens of people. PayPal closing their accounts, giving them no explanation, and in many cases keeping their money. It happened to this program, which had a PayPal account. I'm not whinging about it. It was several years ago now. I reported a PayPal to the FSA. The FSA came back and said, sorry about that, Richie. Nothing we can do about it, though. We'd like to, but there's nothing we can do about it. That's how it was. You know, elements of the UK government said that PayPal should close certain accounts. Mine was one of them. You might remember, the very first person I remember this happening to was a guy that I find absolutely horrendous in every sense of the word, a guy called Stephen Yaxley Lennon, a.k.a. Tommy Robinson. And what did I do at the time? I did what you'd expect me to do. I screamed bloody murder about it. How dare PayPal close somebody's account because of their opinions, regardless of whether you agree with them or not. But this is where it's going now. It's 18 and a half minutes past the hour. It really is awful, isn't it? Like, you like to satirise it. There's not very much I can find funny about this particular situation. I'm going to take a tune now. When I come back from the tune, reading some of your comments. A bit later on, Rob will join the programme. Really nice fella, really interesting fella. He has decided, and his wife, not to continue the vaccination schedule for their child. And the local authorities, not too impressed about that. And we're going to talk about it. They sent him a very interesting letter. This is the Richie Allen Show for Thursday. It is March 14th, 2024. Music from Lou Rawls. I'm indulging myself as a Thursday. It's a Thursday. It's like end of term. Your comments, please, to my website, richieallen.co.uk. Send them to the app as well, please. I love hearing from you.
Lady love, you got the love I need, so stay around.
Lady love, Lou Rawls on the Richie Allen Show. 22 minutes past the hour. I've got to apologise to Anne. I'm sorry, Anne. Richie, I nearly had a freaking heart attack and close to tears over the catering joke until you deliver the punchline. I'm sorry, Anne. Come on, it was only yesterday. It was only this morning I said that. As long as we can carry on, as long as we're allowed to carry on, we'll carry on. I'm not going anywhere. But yeah, it was a bit risque, that. A bit risky. I'm not going anywhere. I thought it was a good gag, that. I thought it was the jape of the season. And then a lot of people probably not even aware of the Clonay Strand Hotel, so completely wouldn't get the gag in any case. Yeah, I have me moments, but sometimes I don't. Thanks, Anne. Mark says, Richie, all the best on the new catering venture. The BBG will not be missed, though. His replacement, James O'Brien, is a significant upgrade. A much more professional-looking beard, Mark, I think, with James O'Brien. I'll have to give you that, really. A professional upgrade, no doubt. Graham says, watching the SpaceX launch, that does not look like a flat Earth, says Graham. Graham, stop stirring the shit now. Enough of your old bollocks now, do you hear me? Kieran says, Richie, what does the BBG stand for? It stands for the Big Baldy Gammon. Big Baldy Gammon. Some years ago, quite a few years ago, it became commonplace for people on the right of the spectrum, the political spectrum, to be referred to as gammons. You know, like rednecks and red faces, because they're always angry. Excuse me. Now, of course, I was never on the right-hand side of the spectrum, me being an old trade unionist. But I adopted the Big Baldy Gammon because I'm big, I'm bald, and, you know, some people would imagine I'm a gammon. If they don't know me, I suppose. Thank you, the Big Baldy Gammon. Hello to Paulie. Richie, as you've said before, laws exist to combat extremism, incitement and hate. These new parameters, says Paulie, are clearly being introduced so that anything countering government narrative will be quashed. It's literally like we're living in Cuba or China now, says Paulie. Paulie, I can't follow that. That's exactly right. Mike says, Richie, the Princess Kate, Bridget Macron, has a penis, and Michelle Obama has a penis, stories will act as a catalyst for future legislation to protect elites from online speculation, says Mike. Maybe. Maybe, Mike, you might be right. I never thought Michelle Obama was a bloke, though. Joan Rivers made a comment, but Joan Rivers was a comedian and a very funny one. You know, in her prime, Joan Rivers was hilarious. I think she was joking. Brigitte Macron, I don't buy that one either, but then you never know, do you? What do I know? What do I know? Seamus asks, Richie, has anybody explored the question that if you cannot get funding from the government and have contact or contract with them, then can you legally withdraw from funding government? Example, not paying your taxes. Could it be argued they broke off the arrangement? It's a bloody good question. That is a good question, Seamus. I do not know. Imagine that. It's a good question, that. Very good question. So the government says, well, we're not going to engage with you anymore. Thanks very much. I won't be paying national insurance or income tax anymore. Thank you, Michael Gove, you squirrely little bastard. Seamus, good point. I've no idea, mate. Maybe somebody will test it. Hi to Richie. Have you ever noticed how Tatchell balks like a horse at Beecher's Brook every time he has to say the woman slash women? I haven't noticed that, but I'll pay attention, Richie. Thank you very much. Good evening, David Keane. So if I think a pederast is a sick fecker, is that wrong? Think? I wouldn't imagine so, David. I think you'll be protected. Good evening to Elizabeth, who says, speaking of hate speech, Dries van Langenhove, a Belgian politician, was convicted two days ago for memes posted years ago by others on a closed Facebook group he hosted. Some of the memes could be considered tasteless, but certainly not hateful or violent. 1 year jail time, tens of thousands of fines, and a 10-year ban on running for office, lawfare in action. I've got to check that one out, Elizabeth. I haven't been following that. And hello to Les, who says, Richie, there are going to be thousands of us oldies that will get into trouble for having an opinion because it's the way we lived our lives. As you mentioned, the younger generations will self-monitor, will self-censor. And G-Man has been in touch. If we look at the timing around the killing of Joe Cox and the terror attacks that occurred during the run-up to Brexit, is it not strange how they all stopped after the vote came through? You could argue that, G-Man. You certainly could. Let's talk for a few minutes now, just for a few minutes, about the fallout from the Frank Hester story. Frank Hester. Now, we've heard repeatedly this week that Frank Hester, very successful businessman, said some hearty words about the MP Diane Abbott, the first ever female a black female MP in Westminster, okay? Was with Labour, is suspended at the moment in the most outlandish, ridiculous and almost funny case of accusation of anti-Semitism. She's not said anything anti-Semitic and she was suspended. So Frank Hester said, we know what he said. He's an asshole, of course, you know, and I'm not trying to score points with anybody. He's an asshole. Polite people and decent people. We don't refer to people like that. So I had a laugh today, though. Mohamed Amersi is a Conservative Party donor. Mohamed Amersi. He told LBC Radio that the Tories, his party, should hand back the donation to Frank Hester. And then he shared a fun anecdote of his own about donating to the Tory party. This is quite fun.
The money should be given back because it's a matter of principle.
Give the money back. It's a matter of principle, right?
You know, I got my 100,000 back because Boris Johnson's breakfast that I had paid for in an auction didn't materialise. I had to fight for it, but I got it back. And so there is no reason why they should not pay the 10 million.
He didn't turn up for breakfast. You paid for breakfast with Boris Johnson, you didn't get it.
No, Mohammed is even dumber than that. He didn't pay for a breakfast with Boris Johnson. He paid £100,000 for a breakfast for Boris Johnson, the big fat bastard. No, he paid for a breakfast with Boris Johnson. He never got it, and he demanded his £100,000 back.
For it, but I got it back, and so there is no reason why they should not pay the £10 million back.
He didn't turn up for breakfast. You paid for breakfast with Boris Johnson, you didn't get it.
I didn't get it, no.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and apparently, he had to go to extraordinary lengths to get his money back from the Conservative Party.
For instance, tomorrow morning, I'll get up nice and early, take a walk down over to the bank and walk in and see you. And if you don't have my money for me, I'll crack your fucking head wide open in front of everybody in the bank. And just about the time that I'm coming out of jail, hopefully, you'll be coming out of your coma. And guess what? I'll split your fucking head open again.
And they gave him the money back, like that, in a heartbeat. That's how you do it. They held on to that £100,000 for months until eventually, well, you heard it right there, he got his money back. Imagine having breakfast with that grotesque, gelatinous goon. Imagine it. I mean, he's hard enough to understand at the best of times, isn't he, Johnson? At the best of times. Imagine trying to grasp what he's saying as he horses his way through plates of fried bread, mushrooms and runny eggs. Jesus, right? Imagine it. Jesus. I bet you Johnson doesn't have a single toy in his wardrobe that doesn't have egg on it. He paid £100,000 for a breakfast with that. God almighty. You think back to 2020, that straw-haired goon, eh? And they never gave it to him. And he had to fight tooth and nail to get his 100k back. Amazing. Do you know who's absolutely shocked that Frank Hester has gotten away with insulting Diane Abbott? Who's horrified now? Disgusted even, I bet you can guess. Horrified is that Frank has gotten away with it. He's angry and he wants everybody to know how angry he is and how virtuous he is too.
I'm shocked that he's getting away with it. I'm even more shocked that Lindsay Hoyle didn't call Diane Abbott yesterday. And I am shocked that the Tory party itself hasn't sought to lance this boil.
He's very shocked.
Even if Rishi Sunak can't be relied upon to do it. They complain about his weakness, his lack of leadership all the time behind closed doors. There is absolutely nothing stopping anybody coming to the plate and saying, if we really can't afford to give the money back because he's ponied up 20% of our entire donation fund in the last 12 months.
Ponied up.
We will replace the money because we don't want to. Every single Conservative MP arrives on your doorstep in a general election campaign propelled in some part by Frank Hester's filthy money.
He's filthy money, Frank Hester. Filthy.
Every single one of you. Or even as you make warm speeches about the need for tolerance and the importance of diversity, even as you opine about the dangers of extremism and the evils of racism, every single one of you turns up on voters' doorsteps in the general election campaign in full knowledge that some of the financial fuel in your political tank has been paid for with Frank Hester's filthy money.
Filthy. Filthy. The fuel in your political tank has been paid for. Filthy money. Properly lost it then.
Every single one of you. Every single one of you. Every single one of you. Every single one of you, if you're a Tory, and you're knocking on doors come election time, you're doing so with Frank Hester's filthy money. Every single one of you.
I take his money, Frank Hester. I wouldn't mind if he donated to the Richie Allen Show. I don't care what he said about Diane Abbott, because that's how life works. You know, people say and do stupid things, really. But we don't give them a eternal kind of permanent red card, do we? You know, we might tell people, I think you shouldn't speak about people like that, pal, you know, but that's just me. Anyway, how much are you donating to the Richie Allen Show? 10 million. I'll have it. Of course I'll have it. Disgusted James O'Brien. And then James O'Brien, and we'll finish with him now very quickly. I mean, this is absolutely glorious, this. He equates racism with snobbery. Now, I know a few snobs. I am actually in contact with one or two snobs from time to time. Not sure they're racist, though. Have a listen.
We all know somewhere inside us that...
You all know somewhere inside you now.
We all know somewhere inside us that race and class are inextricably intertwined in this country. It is
race and class are not inextricably intertwined in the UK. Not at all.
It is impossible to separate racism from what you could loosely describe as snobbery. And
bollocks.
And the closest that a white British person will get to understanding or being on the receiving end of the kind of discrimination that people of colour routinely endure would be class-based discrimination. Because I found myself feeling sorry for Lee Anderson in the last 24 hours. Listen, I think the man is hideous.
Yeah, I'm sure he thinks very fondly of you as well. Listen to this nonsense. This is the sort of shit that, of course, in the grand scheme of things, we know why this is happening, these types of conversations. This is all divide and conquer stuff, get people talking. You know, race to the bottom, which group of people, which identity group is the most oppressed in society. But listen to this crap.
Snobbery, and the closest that a white British person will get to understanding or being on the receiving end of the kind of discrimination that people of colour routinely endure would be class-based discrimination.
Yeah. That's just nonsense, though. They give that guy $300K a year to talk that bollocks. Well, we'll leave him alone now. There's lots more to talk about. Lots of your comments coming through as well. So I'll start reading them. Amy's in Cornwall. Hello, Amy. She says, Richie, anyway, I thought as soon as I heard the comment about the call for protection of MPs and how it played right into it, then the new definition of extremism comes out and it plays right into that. Okay, it might be purely coincidental, but I've lost faith in that world, in the political realm. Just a thought to ponder, she says. Thank you for that. Hello to Rob. Richie, you're on good form, he says today. I am. I'm always on good form. Good evening to Karen. Richie, I had to listen to the long COVID man again on my way home for another giggle, says Karen. Well, Karen, I'm going to make your day. BBC Radio 5 Live only went and did a follow-up. Only went and did a follow-up. Because they're talking about long COVID all week. So they revisited the story of Mr. Duckworth. Mr. Duckworth. They revisited it, but they also interviewed an expert to talk about long COVID. And I think the expert and how the expert talks about it and defines it might give us a clue as to where long COVID is really coming from. And a number of people connected to the programme have said to me, Richie, maybe these... Because I never said that the bloke yesterday, Duckworth, was imagining his symptoms. I never said that. Because I did take a bit of abuse. I had a few emails overnight from people saying, my mum never had a jab, Richie. And she's experienced these symptoms of complete fatigue, you know, exhaustion, brain fog. I never said the guy didn't experience it, by the way. I just kind of lampooned the way it was all set up by the BBC, you know, the guy doing his diary and all of that, which I think I'm entitled to do, you know. I mean, if you've known me for a few years, you know, I do have a warped sense of humour and I do find these things kind of funny. So we will come back to his story in a moment. We won't dwell on it for too long, but the BBC did revisit it today and you might find some of it amusing, but also you might find some of it very interesting. Leave a message for me via the website richieallen.co.uk. You can contact me via the Richie Allen Show app, and the Richie Allen Show app can be downloaded if you are an iPhone user at the App Store. If you are a Android user, you will get it at the Google App Store. It's free. There is no data collection whatsoever. None. Zero. So download it and send me an instantaneous message right here to my screen and chat away with me. Why don't you? Good evening to Ian. He said, Casino retains a spot in my top five films. Thanks for sharing that, Ian. Really appreciate it. Thanks very much. It's a good film, that. Really, really good film. Right. Sharon Stone has been in the news, speaking of Casino, because I incorrectly believed that Sharon had won an Oscar for playing Robert De Niro's wife in Casino. Now, I've not double-checked, because sometimes when you think you're wrong, you're not wrong. I thought she was given an Oscar for Casino, but I think I might be wrong. But she's been in the press because she made a terrible film with Billy Baldwin, didn't she? A film called Sliver. It was absolutely hopeless. Lost with all hands at sea. Terrible film. And Billy Baldwin, not much of an actor, let's be honest about it. Of all the Baldwin brothers, he got the least talent, didn't he? Bit shite, really. Although, yeah. Anywho, the film was terrible. But it was produced by your man Bob Evans, Robert Evans, wasn't it? Legendary producer, Hollywood producer. He produced The Godfather. He produced a lot. A lot of great films, in fact. But he was pretty handy. He was married a number of times and apparently pressurised Sharon Stone, according to her. She said he asked Sharon Stone, would she sleep with Billy Baldwin? Because it might improve his acting performance. He was so bad. Sliver, oh my God. It's almost worth watching Sliver, it's so bad. I would say that. It's almost worth watching it. Sometimes a film is so bad, it's almost hilarious. Right, it is now coming up for 21 minutes to the top of the hour. Another tune, then we'll talk a little bit about long COVID again. In the meantime, The Supremes, Diana Ross. And You Can't Hurry Love. You Can't Hurry Love from The Supremes. Later on, much later on, Phil Collins had a number one with that. I'm sure he did. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from Salford City. The mighty Salford Red Devils entertained the Wigan Warriors this evening at Salford's Community Stadium. The Wigan Warriors are the world champions. Salford, though, three wins on the bounce. Three wins on the bounce, including the first win over St. Helens away in 44 years. Last Friday, I was there up in St. Helens. We were absolutely loving it up there last Friday. So we've got Wigan this evening at 8 o'clock. If you're in the area, go and get yourself a ticket. £24. You can't go wrong. Fantastic entertainment. The wonderful Salford Red Devils. I will be there, of course. Now, let us talk about long COVID. Matt Hancock's long COVID. Right, so it's been long COVID week at the BBC. BBC Radio 5 Live has been attempting to dig down into and to try and find out what long COVID is. What is it? Why are so many people allegedly suffering from it? 1.9 million, 2 million people in the country. Never-ending long COVID. They featured a guy yesterday. They played a video diary. He had reached out to the Beeb. The Beeb said, oh, you sound terrible. Why don't you make a video diary for us? We will play it on the radio. And then we will talk about long COVID and what's really going on. Let us hear a smidgen and a smidgen only of Simon Duckworth, his video diary, life with long COVID for 3 years.
I can usually park nearby. If it's too far away, then I wouldn't be able to do it. And I also need a shower this morning, and that sounds like it's the common thing you just do. But I have to factor that in to my energy budget for the day. I have to think in terms of an energy budget.
Having a shower is difficult if you have long COVID. It knackers the living bejesus out of you, and therefore you have to think about your energy budget, right? So he sounded knackered, right?
So just had a shower and got dry and I feel exhausted. So I've also taken a look on my phone. I've got a wearable that tracks my heart rate. So when I left my last message, it was about 65 BPM. And now it's jumped up to 130 BPM in the shower. So I'm now dressed and up my desk.
So he's knackered, right? And he talks about going to a school play and walking to the front door of the school and being knackered. This is long COVID. I had the same problem having a share. The future missus jumped into the share with me one time and my heart rate went up to 278 beats per minute. So it can happen. Long COVID. Right, so the BBC, this was yesterday. Now today, the BBC revisited the story. They followed it up with expert opinion. This is new. Listen up.
4 years on since the start of the pandemic, we're talking long COVID. Yesterday, we played an audio diary that Five Live listener Simon Duckworth recorded for us. He's 47. He emailed us to share that he'd been suffering with long COVID for almost 3 years. Here's a little bit of his morning routine.
So, just had a shower and got dry and I feel exhausted. So,
let me skip on there. A little bit. Okay. The presenter is going to come back in and we're going to hear an expert.
Right. Time to start work.
He's not.
We're going to be playing my interview with Simon after 8 o'clock this morning. We're joined now by the NHS's National Speciality Advisor for Long COVID, Dr. Melissa Heitman. Morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I wonder if listening to that little snippet of Simon's audio diary, you feel like that's a good representation of the kind of experiences that people are having with long COVID.
Right, so this is the NHS woman. She's their main woman on long COVID. She's a long COVID doctor, Melissa Heitman. So Simon sounded absolutely fucked, right? Completely death's door. Is that kind of indicative? Is that commonplace? What did she say?
Yeah, very much so. And thank you to Simon.
Give over.
Simon for sharing his story so powerfully and to the programme for keeping focus on this. I'm a long COVID doctor. I've led a service at University College London Hospital where we've seen 5,000 people. And absolutely that story is representative. You know, long COVID has been a very difficult illness for the people who we've been offering care to.
And I think it's worth pointing out as well that long COVID, obviously, as Simon talks about, in fact, doesn't just impact the person who has it. It has a wider impact on their family. Simon's daughter recorded this as part of the audio diary.
It can be quite difficult, but also be a bit frustrating because it takes Dad longer to do things, like coming back from school like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And it's doing walks and it's playing games.
So it's kind of, it's pretty heartbreaking listening to Simon's daughter there, who was brilliant and very, very open. But it really is having a, you know, we think 1.9 million people having it in private homes, and then obviously the sort of ripple effects of, you know, the people around them. Like, it's having a huge impact, isn't it?
I promise you, but you can check whether I'm lying or not by simply going to the BBC Sounds app and listening to the entire programme. I'm not lying when I say at no point did Rick Edwards. Now, Rick Edwards is as useless as tits on a bull. Useless, right? At no point did he ask her, well, 2 million people. I mean, does the severity of this depend on the person's weight, the person's eating habits, exercise, comorbidities, or even if they had a COVID jab? He doesn't ask any such question. She comes back in there with the long COVID doctor. This is important.
It is having a huge impact, and it's why it's been so important that we've had protective funding to set up new care for long COVID in the NHS. There are over 100 clinics available around the country. We would say if anyone is feeling that they might have long COVID, please do speak to your GP about whether you would benefit from a referral. Those clinics are...
So they have loads of clinics around the country now.
Open and able to offer you support. And we're seeing real benefits when people access the right help, especially in a timely way. And we've done an awful lot of learning in the NHS over the last few years about the right treatment approach that can get people really important benefits and really important improvements in the ability to cope with their life with this condition.
Right. Okay. Then he asks a good question, the chap, for once and for the only time in the interview.
This is pretty key from Alan, who says, what is the diagnostic test to confirm if anyone has it and what are the treatments to recover from it?
Fantastic. This is what I would have asked at the very outset. How do you diagnose long COVID? That's the first question, right?
So there isn't a diagnostic test, but...
What?
But what we're able to do now is recognise a pattern of illness and use our judgment to decide whether long COVID is the right diagnosis to assign.
Right. So in other words, if you say it's long COVID based on some pattern, imaginary or otherwise, in your mind. But there's no diagnostic test whatsoever. I think that's what she said.
There isn't a diagnostic test.
But wow.
But what we're able to do now is recognise a pattern of illness and use our judgment to decide whether long COVID is the right diagnosis to assign. And that's a really important step. It's really important that people who have long COVID are accurately diagnosed and that that's shared with other people who are offering them care.
Yeah, but you just said you can't accurately diagnose them. There's no diagnostic test for long COVID. This is quite amazing. And of course, he didn't pick her up on it and say, well, that won't be satisfactory to many of our listeners, Dr. whatever your name is, Melissa Heitman. It won't be satisfactory, you know. So basically, you're taking a shot in the dark every time a patient comes to you and says, I'm suffering post-viral syndrome, I think. I've got shortness of breath. I don't have a lot of energy. Bit of brain fog. So basically, you're just going long COVID, right? And then you're throwing that on the pile, right? This is crazy stuff. Your comments on it, please, to richieallen.co.uk, to the website. KJ came on to say, Richie, what does he say? There always seems to be somebody messaging you when you debunk a mainstream narrative, i.e. long fake COVID, with their own personal experience of what you're challenging. One would have thought your show would not be their cup of tea, which makes me wonder if it might be AI-generated tea monitors. I don't think so, KJ. Because some of the emails, they're genuine emails from people. I had one from a gentleman yesterday who said his mum has been suffering similar symptoms to that which the guy Duckworth, Simon Duckworth, said he was suffering. His mum is not jabbed. And it was a very nice email. It said, I like the show, Richie, thanks. I just thought you'd like to mention this, which I have done. So I'm open to the idea that lots of people all of a sudden are suffering genuine symptoms of extreme fatigue, something they've never experienced previously, and they're struggling to go about their day-to-day business. I'm open to that. But a number of friends of mine have been in touch since yesterday's programme and said, Richie, we are surrounded by a toxic soup, are we not? You know, non-ionising radiation, for example, Wi-Fi devices, right? Obviously, electric pylons, 5G towers, chemtrailing, which is obviously a real thing. We know this. Factor in to that, a lot of people had mRNA jabs. Like, a lot of people did have them, and a lot of people had more than one. So maybe people are experiencing problems that can be attributed to multiple factors, not just the jabs. Obviously, the jabs are a huge problem. We know the jabs have committed a variety of damage to people. The jabs have killed many people and grievously injured others. But it's a toxic soup. So I must have made a complete balls of it yesterday when I was mocking the BBC presentation and Simon's video. I didn't want anybody to think that I don't believe that these things are happening. They must be happening. I mean, they must be happening. People carrying around smartphones, the radiation from those. It's radiation everywhere. It's a horrible atmosphere now that we kind of go about in or go about under. So, yeah, I think that undoubtedly people are feeling it. You know, I'm open to the idea that my own issues with sleep might be down to where, you know, where I live and the environment I live in, maybe. Carl's in Leicester. My missus jumped in the shower with me not so long ago, but to my disappointment, it was only because she'd been waiting so long for me to get out, says Carl. Yes, that's about right, Carl. Dan says, the only positive thing I can see in long COVID is for people blagging a day off due to long drinking. Amen. Hi to Len. He sounds like he's been smoking Spanish black cigarettes called Ducatas rather than long COVID. He's got a voice like a male flamenco singer, says Len. Thank you, Len. And this one is from Michael Dooling. Hello, Michael. Richie, my dad suffered with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder, for a couple of years, but was living with it. He was managing it. He then received the flu shot along with the COVID shot. He had pulmonary fibrosis within a matter of weeks, permanently on oxygen for 2 years before he sadly passed away last September. It boils my piss, these gaslighting bastards, says Michael. Michael, I'm sorry, pal. He had COPD, which is a serious condition, but you said he was managing it. And I know that because he had COPD, they were probably pushing the vaccines pretty hard on your dad. And then you say pulmonary fibrosis within weeks of getting the jabs, then went on to permanent oxygen and then passed away. And of course, you have 1,000 questions, right? And I'm guessing nobody's answering those questions, Michael. This is the issue. Lots of messages. Hi to Beryl. Hello, Beryl. I'm rolling on the floor. I cannot stop laughing. If I didn't laugh, I'd vomit, she says. Okay, Beryl, thanks. I'm trying to think of what could be so funny. Thank you, Beryl. Hi to Peter Waters. Peter, it's a long message. I can't read that out, pal. You've got to shorten your messages, people. Kev says he's in Tyrone. That long COVID clip sets off my I smell bullshit meter. I could be wrong, but the bollocks we've been fed the last few years makes me question everything. Hello to Michelle, who says it sounds like they're using the same logic to diagnose long COVID that they did with COVID. It could be effing anything. Excellent, Michelle. I mean, the cheek of her to say to him, there's no diagnostic test. You know, we just kind of look at it and see if it kind of fits some certain symptoms, and then we assign as a diagnosis, and then we refer the patient to a long COVID clinic. It is bollocks, of course it is. So what I'm saying is long COVID is bollocks, as they would diagnose it. But people suffering Simon symptoms, not bollocks possibly, maybe a lot more people than we think, are going about wondering why. Why is it that I don't have any energy these days? Why is it that my mind is all over the place these days? Why do I have headaches all the time? Well, maybe, and I can't say for sure. Toxic soup. The time now is 3 minutes to the top of the hour. Before I take another tune, let me read one or two more of these. Hi to Cat with a K. I'm assuming Duckworth was tested for other common issues like COPD. And whether a lot of costly issues like COPD are being misdiagnosed under the umbrella term of long COVID, much like many deaths were registered as COVID, despite causes being run over by a bus or gunshot wounds, for example. Also, does he have damp or mould where he lives? So many possibilities, says Kat, just saying, and she's bang on the money. To our listeners who are leaving messages via the website, I swear I am not ignoring you. For some reason, loading my website and refreshing it and getting onto Comment Live is difficult right now. I'm sorry about that. But I will get to them, I promise you, before the end of the programme, okay? I've not lined up any music because I'm a bit of an idiot. So we'll dig out some Spandau Ballet kind of randomly. Here we go then. Spandau Ballet. The New Romantics on the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live from Salford. We love Salford. Back with more now, and Rob will be hearing from Rob. He's got an interesting story as well. Right, Spandau Ballet, true. I managed to open the website, so let me read a few comments from the website. Diane says the medical profession is riding this COVID horse to death. No doubt about that. Anto says, remember when they told us one of the symptoms of COVID was having no symptoms? Yes, we talked about that yesterday, Anto, didn't we? Pandora says, if there was to be a diagnostic test for long COVID, it would once again be fake, just like the fake PCR test, and which was misused, so it would be meaningless. According to Pandora, what we are seeing is an ME-style long fatigue, which is long known to have come from older vaccines anyway, or from environmental factors. Thank you for that. Lots going on, I think. Jonathan says, are we 100% sure that Simon doesn't have the man flu? I know that flu went missing for a while, but I'm pretty sure it is back now. And Scaramouche says, if he has long COVID, would he not be passing it on at the school play? See, that's another very good question. And if I'd been preparing for an interview with Melissa Heitman, the NHS long COVID woman, I would have sat down and thought about it. And that's one of the questions, Scaramouche, I would have asked her. Is long COVID contagious? You know? Can you look at it under a microscope? Does it shed? Anyway, good stuff. Wayne says, I believe free speech began to be impeded in the UK in the 1990s. It's gone into overdrive since 2020, with censorship of views considered as an alternative regarding COVID and the new jabs, and the cancelling of all whose views don't meet the current acceptable beliefs regarding medicine, gender, race or foreign conflicts. This legislation, or this definition, because it isn't legislation, Wayne, I know what you mean, this definition could be used to silence anyone who says anything which has been deemed unacceptable, including members of the public and serving MPs such as Bridgen and his comments on jab injuries and deaths, no doubt. Absolutely right. 100%, man. I agree with that. Brilliant stuff. Wonderful. Christine's been in touch. It's making me angry, Richie, this long COVID stuff. As you know, Jesse had a heart attack in October. Hasn't been great from then. I had to fight for him to get a cardiac review that can only take place over the phone. The nurse on the end of the phone says, in her opinion, his breathlessness wasn't cardiac related. And this is with no blood test or any other test. As they told me, their funding has been cut since the pandemic and they cannot do in-person clinics. I'm battling to get his cardiologist to see him to get the echogram or echocardiogram he was supposed to have 4 weeks after his MI. That's shocking stuff, isn't it? Over the phone. Thanks, Christine. Give our best to Jesse. That's absolutely horrendous. I mean, let me have a listen to him over the phone. No, that's not related to his heart. That's almost satiric. That's vaudevillian in the extreme, isn't it? Pietro says, I truly believe long COVID is a form of psychosis following a prolonged bombardment of negativity over the last 4 years. I can understand how one might believe they have fallen victim to the virus. Good evening, Gabriel. It seems long message syndrome is catching on too. It is, it is. Hello to John, to Jan. Jan says, long COVID equals you've been Rogered by the shots. And Mel says, hello, Mel. Touching on the long COVID thing, yesterday, pre-pandemic, my sister-in-law had the flu and ended up in hospital with pneumonia and then went on to get post-viral fatigue, says Mel. She was the type of person to always have activities planned. She was always on the go, but it knocked her off her feet for a year. And then on occasion, she would have little relapse where she felt exhausted. That's from Mel. Thank you so much to Mel. What have I done there? I've done something stupid. So I've got to apologise to somebody. Okay. Right, yes. Now, I mentioned earlier on at the top of the programme, didn't I, that Rob had been in touch. And I wish some of our listeners would do this more often when something as important as this happens. Right, so Rob reached out to me. And Rob and his missus, they have a young child. And I'll let Rob tell you the story. Let's welcome him to the show. Hello, Rob. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Very well. Thanks for having us on.
No, thanks for agreeing to come on, mate. It's really nice to meet you. And thanks for reaching out to the programme. So you have a youngster. How old is he?
He's just coming up to 1 year old.
So the fun times. So it's madness. It's madness at Casa Rob. Now, why did you reach out to me? Because I think he had a jab. And if memory serves, you and the missus decided he wouldn't have any more. Tell us about that and tell us why.
Yeah, sure. So obviously they have the first jabs at 8 weeks and we went down and obviously you're in the trenches at that stage. So you go along with it and you think, well, we had our childhood vaccinations as well. And something just didn't sit right with me. So I started having a look, just researching the individual ones. You know, they've got a 6-in-1, a 3-in-1 and all these vaccines that it actually turns out they have up to 30 in the first year now. 30 in different forms and different concoctions. But there's, like I said, there's a 6-in-1 and 3 and stuff. So I worked it out. It's 30 up to 12 months old. And just from basic, even just Googling, which I'm not a fan of, but using their own data, you know, on the government and the NHS website, looking at how serious these things are and if, you know, if we need to sort of pump in with all this stuff, which part of it we don't really know what's in it as well. Nobody seems to know. You know, there's a big list, but what does it actually do? And certainly if you're mixing a cocktail together, what does that do? So once you had a look, we went back the second time, and I did speak to the lady, and it's not, this is not, by the way, it's not the practice that does it. There's like a private company that come in and do it, which I'm really annoyed. I couldn't find the piece of paper, but I'll send you that at some point.
Hey Rob, I didn't know this now, so this is new to me. So you would imagine the baby goes into your family GP surgery, and you would imagine right. that the nurse or the doctor administers the jabs, but in fact, no, it's another company who comes in on the day. I didn't know that now. That is very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't either, but then you look at, you know, on the letter on the top corner that they invite you in. So, obviously it's a vaccination team of some respect, for some description. I was asking the lady, I said, look, I'm a bit uncomfortable actually with, I'm not argumentative, but just in a conversational way. I'm giving her some of the stats and then sort of questioning why. And don't get me wrong, she's really nice, polite and everything. And the sort of the same old, well, you've got your right to your own opinion. Where are you getting your stats from? To which I replied, well, it's your own sort of stats, really. She was fair and we left. You get letter after letter. And we're not missing doctor points, by the way. These are like, it's like a Ferris wheel. You get invited at a time in a day or whatever, and they just bring the kid in.
Right, Rob, can we roll back a second? So,
sure.
So after the 8-week jab, you and the missus then, having done the bit of research and having asked questions where the answers were maybe not satisfactory, you decided then that the lad wouldn't be having any more.
Yeah, pretty much. We were still discussing it, actually, as to whether there are any that you know, we do feel that he had. So we're still under, and that's why that this letter came, which we'll talk about in a minute. It came at a really bad time because we were discussing what other vaccines he should or shouldn't have. I'm not big on the vaccines after the COVID sort of scam. We got this quite threatening letter, which is really, I mean, the language used, I sent it to you, I don't know if you want to read it out, what the best thing is.
Oh no, we have to read it out. I mean, oh yeah, sure. It must be read out, yeah. You can read it out, sure. Or I can read it out. Can I ask you to do me a favour?
Sure.
I don't mean to be rude now. I think you're doing what I do when you're on the phone. You're moving close to the phone and then you're moving away from it and then you're moving close to it. If you wouldn't mind kind of keep a consistent distance, because I'm riding the fader here, you see, while you're talking, because what you're saying is really important. So, yeah, if you kind of be as close to the phone as you can. Because it did. Look, we don't... I think you've listened to the show often enough. We try not to be sensational. But the letter, it's nasty, I think. It's more than nasty. Do you want to read it or do you want me to read it?
You read it, Rich. You'll be better at it than me.
Well, I won't be better at it, but I'll read it, right? The practice has been made aware of 8 missed appointments in the last 12 months for master baby. For master's third immunizations. This has been raised to the practice's safeguarding team and discussed in this month's safeguarding meeting. We can see that you have an appointment scheduled for the 22nd of March 2024, 11:30. Please can we advise that you attend this appointment for the health and well-being of the baby. If you are unable to attend, please contact the surgery to rearrange. If you wish not to have the baby immunised, please contact the surgery to discuss. If the upcoming appointment is missed and the practice does not hear from you, this will be escalated in line with the practice's safeguarding policy. That's a none too subtle threat, Rob.
It's certainly threatening and also very insinuating about our parenting in a number of ways, to a point which for me it was more rage. But for my partner, you know, and she's thick skin, Richie, but it kind of has that undertone of, we're going to come and take your baby. Do you know what I mean? It's not in so many words, but what they're suggesting is, we're coming for you if you don't sort of toe the line in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'll be devil's advocate here. Some people might think you're making a leap there in terms of that they might come for the baby.
Agreed.
You know that. But I'm going to say this, if I was in your position, I would be concerned about the language, and I can't wait to hear what you are doing. I'd be inclined because you know, there's a lot of tough talk on the show, and I say things in reality. I would ring them and I'd be very polite with them and say, listen, we're not convinced that before a child is 1 or 2 that they need so many inoculations, and we're not convinced that it's entirely safe, and this is the reason we've decided not to do it. I mean, what has been your response so far in terms of what have you said back to them?
So, yeah, so I called up asking to obviously speak to the person who wrote the letter and explain why. He wasn't in, but the reception said that they'd get a member of the safeguarding team to call me back. They then call me back and pass through. Don't worry, you don't have to do anything. We'll just put a note on his thing. And I said, and she said, I'm sorry about all of this. And I said, it's not your fault, respectfully, and you've been very polite, but I want to speak to the person that wrote this letter to understand the rationale behind it. I also ended up saying this and said, oh, we'll take that on board. So I got an email address and I wrote an email asking to know exactly what has been discussed about me and my family, exactly what it means by if the upcoming appointment is missed, this will be escalated in line with the safeguarding policy. And also what actual health and wellbeing have they undertaken other than following up the jabs of my son? You know, it actually enrages me now thinking about the language of it. And I sent that off. And actually, in fairness, I got a call from the receptionist because I put on the letter that I want to see them in person, or if they'd like to respond in writing first, that's okay too. And I have got a meeting with them next Wednesday. So I'll be going to understand a little bit more about who's written the letter, because to me it looks drafted very much like it's almost TV license coercive, threatening.
I mean that line, can we advise that you attend this appointment for the health and well-being of the baby? It is, it's not nice. And we must remember, there are no laws on the statute books of this country that compel a mum or a dad or both parents to immunise their children. It isn't the law, thank God. I mean, maybe someday in the future in some dystopian world, but as it stands, you and your wife are responsible for the well-being of your baby. And if you feel that it's, you know, the best thing to do is to not have all of these immunisations. I've heard from doctors on this programme, proper doctors, and they've said it is insane to give so many jabs to a baby whose immune system is nowhere near developed.
Correct, yeah.
And that's what they say, and these are proper docs. Some of them are still practicing. Yeah, wow. And you got a fright when you saw that letter, didn't you? I mean, that would have scared me, 100%. To be honest.
And also, look, just to give, and I won't go into it too much, but if I can, just give you two that I looked up. Well, you know, this is one of the reasons. So one of them is rotavirus that they give you straight away. Rotavirus is sickness and diarrhea.
Yeah.
And by their own admission, every child under the age of 5 will probably have it. That's what they say, okay?
Yeah.
Now, on their own pamphlet, which is the first one I got, which is why it kind of triggered me into it, it says 1 in 10 that they give the rotavirus vaccine will get sickness, diarrhea, and irritability. 1% will get bad abdominal pains and inflammation. So already 10% is going to get it anyway from it, and 1% could be quite serious. Now, a baby can't tell you he's got severe abdominal pains, can he or she? And that was one where I thought, well, why this just doesn't make sense to me. And it's a live virus, by the way. So you can actually get it yourself from the baby, or your grandparents or people with immune suppressed can catch it. So from this virus, and you just think to yourself, well, what are we doing here? The other one was hepatitis passed via semen and blood, you know, hepatitis B rather. And then there's a number of others, but I don't want to bore people with it. But
hang on. You are not boring people. The people don't know this stuff. There will be people listening to this program and they have babies. The odds of a child. So the rotavirus jab, 1 in 10 kids who get it is going to get the virus because of the jab. I mean, that's just ridiculous. But you're right.
Yep.
I've looked this up myself. Yep. And then hepatitis. The odds, as far as I understand it, of a child coming down with hepatitis, they're in the hundreds of thousands to one, if not even greater.
Yep. Sure.
So why would you give it then?
Exactly. And that's my concern. It's that we're doing, you know, we know that although it's free for us, somebody's paying for it to someone. So they just keep adding on more and more. And it just becomes incredible to me because, as you well know, you know, your immune system builds itself. But all of these diseases on there, they're not really things that, you know, kind of put the willies up new parents. You know, measles, and again, measles is 1 in 5,000. Dive cases, mumps was 2 in 10,000. You know, rubella is based in zero. It's all these things you just start thinking, so, okay.
Rob, can I ask you, sorry to interrupt you again. Yeah. Did they say that 1 in 5,000 children who comes down with measles will die? Did they?
No, that's just from the, like I said, just from online. So basic Googling on normal right. websites that you'd look at. And basic UK, this is UK stats, by the way, as well, to yeah. be a bit clearer. But there's, like I said, if you just start Googling cases and deaths of these in the UK, you'll get the UK and the NHS and things like that. And some of them say scary things on them. But then when you actually look at the data, it tells you that they're not. And now you could argue that it's all like that because of these. And I'm not saying it's 100% not. I just, from a statistical point of view, I don't buy it. I don't think it's necessarily the right thing for him at this age. He's extremely healthy. And just may make one more point actually on that.
Of course.
Which is what really annoyed me. Was on this, after this letter. So in January, we actually had his 10-month, you only seem to do one or two, but like an actual checkup where they do sort of, it's a bit like cognitive and physical. And he was exceptional on every single one. So to suggest that the health and well-being relating to the jabs that he hasn't had is a concern, yet they obviously haven't looked at anything else other than that. So they haven't actually taken into consideration his medical history and that he's doing really well. It's purely based on that he hasn't been for his jabs, which is potentially money, but I don't know that for sure.
The thing that's disturbing our listeners now listening to this is the letter, obviously. But about 36 emails have come in. I'm just going through them. Michael mm-hmm. in Lowe's, cannot believe it's 30. This is Michael in Lowe's, 30 inoculations. He's not questioning you. He believes you, but his mind is blown by it. His mind is blown by the idea that you would give 30 shots to a baby before the baby is a year old. That is yep. I didn't know that either. You've educated me. I thought it was a half a dozen or more.
Sure. Just to clarify that point there, Richie, it's 30 vaccines, but some of them are like in one, you know, there's like 6 in 1, 3 in 1. So it's not 30 individual jabs to the arm as such, just to be really clear.
Yeah.
But it is 30 vaccines of whatever combination they've worked, you know, they're putting together in.
We are being listened to by a friend of the programme's, very, very, very good journalist called Nicola Lund, lovely lady. She's making a very good point here. Nicola says, sounds like everybody needs to ask their GP surgeries for copies of safeguarding policies. That's, yeah, absolutely right.
Very good point. Very good point.
I mean, the cheek of him, safeguarding. We'll up, we will escalate it to our safeguarding yeah. team. Yeah. But the only person yeah. doing the safeguarding here is you and your wife.
Well, this is the problem. And like I said on the left to them, what actual safeguarding, you know, or looking at his health and well-being, have you actually done? Because to put that in there would suggest that, you know, you've been looking at our file or discussing it. Now, only things that are on there is very healthy baby, doing really well, which we're very blessed to have, and hasn't had these, you know, 30, 28 of the whatever jabs that he's supposed to have. So it just seems very, I'm not sure that they've written that, and that's why I want to speak to them. I think it looks like a copy and paste job, because of the wording is very, it's quite, I'm from a sales background, it's quite salesy in a coercive and kind of threatening manner. Do you know what I mean? The wording is quite specific, and it doesn't look like someone's just quickly drafted that up to me. So you wonder where it comes from.
So you're on the, absolutely, you and the missus are on the same page, which is good, right? That's important.
Sure. Well, we've had a discussion. We're still discussing it. And you know, she trusts me to have a look into things. And I think we both had a discussion early on in the COVID thing, which turned out to be, you know, a very good one in the end, because she was quite close to, you know, going fully in. So I think, we've just worked together on it and just hope that we're doing the right thing. We're trying our best, and we can only do with, you know, with the data that we have and the sort of research that we do, we just try and do the best for, fully enough, the health and well-being of our child.
Will you, of course, update me, won't you, on what happens when you go and see them? And let's end our conversation on the positive for a couple of minutes.
Sure.
Because this is your first child, if memory serves.
He's an incredible guy. He's so good, so funny, so loving, and he's It's been an absolute joy. It's tough at the start, but yeah, and that's why when you get something like this, I think it kind of, you know, makes you really mad because you obviously love something so much and you're trying your best all the time and you're tired and all the things that come with it. But yeah, look, that's the great saving grace of all this is we know that this guy is healthy, he's happy, and that is all that really matters. But I am going to see this a bit further on.
Yeah, of course you will. And tell us about, is it as life-changing as every bloke talks about? Because we've all had mates, haven't we, Rob? We've all had mates. Because my missus and I, we don't have any children. But we have mates, and the blokes always say, oh, you're a completely different man. You're completely changed. You're never the same again. That love that you have. Is there truth in this? Is that how you feel?
Well, I actually thought when my friends told, because I'm a bit later to the party, I'm nearly 40 now, and I kind of thought they were saying it, and I was looking at it thinking, is this 100% true? And I can say it's 100% true. It's something that I've never experienced before. A bit like flicking on a switch and all these Christmas lights coming on that you didn't know were there, I think, for me. And it certainly changed you a person for the better for me anyway.
Thanks for reaching out to the show. It's very important.
Thanks, Richie.
It's obviously making it means something to a lot of our listeners, and I think Nicola is right. We need to be asking surgeries for safeguarding policy so we can have a good look at them. All the best for the weekend. Have a great weekend, you, the missus, and your young lad. And thanks again, Rob.
Thanks, Richie. Love the show. Keep it up, and take.
You're very kind, mate. Thank you. Thanks, Rob. Fascinating that Rob reached out to me the other day. He said, we decided that after jab number one, that we began to look basically at the other jabs scheduled for the young lad and thought that maybe he doesn't need them, you know, and he began to look into the jabs and what they did and, you know, what they claimed to do and protect against, and didn't like what he found, basically. And they decided no more, and then received a rather sinister, and again, I'm not over-egging this, sinister letter from the GP surgery. You know, none too subtly threatening to escalate the issue to the safeguarding team because they had decided not to have the third set of immunizations. Thanks to Rob for that. A lot of comment on it, unsurprisingly. Is it something you've experienced yourself? Please do let me know. Please do let me know. A number of you are saying safeguarding is one of these terms that has emerged, Orwellian language, newspeak, in recent years. I think you're right. I can't argue with that. On post-vaccination fatigue, Stephanie asks, could post-vaccine fatigue be related to a decrease of platelets count? My friend who is injured from a COVID jab saw her platelets count down to 10, fell to 10. Her main symptoms are fatigue and bruises. She's now on medication for life. I'd urge anyone who suffers from fatigue post-vaccination to go have their platelet count checked. That's from Stephanie. Thanks for that. Yes, absolutely. 100%. 100%. Good evening to Julie. Hello, Julie. Flu was rebranded like Asti Spumante was rebranded to Prosecco, she says. Yes, same thing, just sneaky advertising. They said it, and people believed it, didn't they? They said flu was absent through 2020 and the winter of 2021 and late 2021. They said there was no flu, they said. I'm not going to do it now because it'll take me a few minutes, but I've got the clips. I've got the clips from television shows. I've got audio sound bites from politicians and scientists saying that flu is gone. And then they said flu is gone because of social distancing and because of people staying at home. I mean, they just lied and lied and lied and lied and lied. And for me, when I think back, the greater the whopper, it seems to me the more people were likely to believe it. You know, they were competing with one another. Radio and television stations and doctors and politicians to invent the most outlandish bullshit. Let's just see what we can make these people believe, you know. It's crazy. Cookie came on to say, I'm amazed that parents don't do research on this. I've talked to some who go and have their all the vaccinations and they say, well, what can a parent do? I mean, what does that mean? I believe in independent research. And with these jabs, it would take 1 hour maximum to find that I'd rather not have my child vaccinated. Thank you. says Cookie there. Hello to Bernie. As mad as this might sound, says Bernie, I'm a big believer in reincarnation. I don't have any children, and I'm 60, but I'm worried about getting childhood vaccines in the next life, says Bernie. That's interesting, Bernie. Thanks for that. Sarah says, Richie, I've just looked up vaccine program for kids in the UK. I've sent the link on Skype, says Sarah. It's shocking. I'll have to pick it up later on, Sarah. I can't get Skype open here today. The schedule you're talking about, Sarah. Yeah. I mean, even though Rob said 6 in 1 on one day, so that's like, it's one vaccine, but it's 6. It's actually 6, really, when you think about it. And then 3 in 1 another day. Thanks for the link, Sarah. Christine came back on to say, it's because they do 6 in 1, etc., that people think in the UK they don't get 30 jabs. I believe this is done deliberately. Chris Bonds has been on. Hello, Chris. Brilliant call, he says. Healthy debate within the family. Thanks to Rob. Thank you, Rob. Steph is on to say, the Defender USA, 34 deaths, 302 serious injuries from rotavirus vaccines. Is that right? RSW vaccines. You'll have to help me out, Steph. Is that what rotavirus is? Is that how they say it or write it? Or presented, RSW, 34 deaths, 302 serious injuries. Is that in a year? Is that in a week? In a month? Let me know. RichieAllen.co.uk, that's my website. Leave a message via the app for the programme as well. I would appreciate it. Okay. I'm with you for another 10 or so minutes, and then I'm taking, not so early, but an early bath. Before I do any more, though, Sunday is St. Patrick's Day. Isn't that wonderful? There will be parades taking place everywhere. As far as I remember, I didn't check this year, but ordinarily the Manchester St. Patrick's Day festivities, they usually take place about a week before the real St. Patrick's Day on March 17th. As far as I remember now. Could be wrong. I'm often wrong. So maybe it happened last week. I don't know. I don't think there's anything happening on Sunday. But in Ireland and in other great cities around the world, St. Patrick's Day parades will be taking place this coming Sunday. Would you believe it? Your BBG only ever walked in a St. Patrick's Day parade one time, would you believe? Yes. I was very, 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 very young. I was like 5 or 6 years old. And right across the street from my house in Ballybeg was St. Saviour's Hurling and Gaelic Football Club, GAA Club, and Camogie. And at the time I was going over there, I never had any proficiency with the hurley, to be honest. And I was a bang average soccer player. I hardly played Gaelic football. But anyway, yeah, so I think I marched in one parade with the hurling club with my little Gansey, my little jersey, and my hurley. But other than that, I never took part in the parade. Waterford's parades are usually excellent. I've got to give credit to my old town. My memories of the parades in Waterford, always very, very good. Really, really good. Great floats. Great creativity in the floats. You know, great. The costumes, the Irish dancing, everything brilliant. So, Sunday morning between 10 and noon, as it is the first time Sunday Morning Melodies has fallen on St. Patrick's Day, I'm going to focus exclusively on traditional Irish music, folk songs, and maybe one or two interesting sound bites from people, Irish people, no longer with us, maybe. We'll see how it goes. I will produce it on Saturday. No day off this weekend then for the BBG. But I'm looking forward to that. So Sunday morning, between 10 and noon, Sunday Morning Melodies will exclusively focus on Irish music because it will be St. Patrick's Day. And I hope you look forward to it. I hope you listen to it. Okay. Very good. Jenny says, I wasn't vaccinated as a kid because my parents didn't believe in it. Were they ahead of their time? I reckon they were. No doubt about that. When I gave blood some years ago, they asked me to give plasma instead because they said I have a very strong immune system. I asked them if this was because I wasn't vaccinated and they said probably. Yes, and that would make sense. That would make sense to me. I would love them to do a study. You might remember my friend, you might not, but before COVID, I interviewed a doctor from the United States of America, a GP. His name escapes me. He was lovely. I must ask him back. I will eventually figure out who he is. It'll come to me in a moment. And he has been asking for many, many years for a controlled study of 500 people. Now, this study would take 25 to 30 years, maybe longer. So you take 500 infants and you say, not a sausage, no vaccines, nada, niente. You take 500 and they get the schedule, okay? Obviously, it would have to be 500 babies where the parents were happy for them to have the schedule in any case. And then you monitor those 1,000 people from infancy right through to adulthood, even middle age, and be honest about it. This is never going to happen, of course. This is a pipe dream, as you well know, dear listener. And the doctor in question agreed with me when I said it's a pipe dream. They're never going to do it. And he said, you're right, Richie. But that is what should happen, isn't it? Of course. 500 group A, 500 group B. And I think you and I both know that if you look at them when they're 40, now one or two of them will have died. Natural causes, maybe. You know, an accident, maybe. Whatever. But if you have the remaining children who've grown up into adulthood, the ones who haven't had the jabs, in my opinion, will be far healthier. If you look at their health record over the course of that particular time. Yes, doctors calling for this for years. Doctors who do not believe that children should have 10, 12, 15, 20, 30 vaccinations. It's ridiculous when you think about it. It's outlandish. It's crazy. We had the BCG. That was all we had. Polio jab. I still have the scars on my arm where the needles penetrated my skin. It must have been a hell of a racket giving that jab to a baby. But that's what I got, right? Right? So there you are. Okay, thank you for your messages. Now. This one from Nelly. Richie, I don't know how you will take this. Nelly, I will take it any way you give it to me. Maybe the heavens are keeping you without child so that you can serve as the host that you are for informing and sharing information to the people. We need people like you, says Nelly. We've all got a path. Nelly, who knows? Who knows? My opinions, not my opinions. The things I used to think were bizarre and weird and esoteric and otherworldly and silly. I don't think like that anymore. You know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why we're here. Maybe you're right, Nelly. I'm not particularly special. I'm not compliment fishing. You know that. I don't know. I think it might have passed us by, but it would have been interesting. It would certainly have been interesting. David Bramble. Hi, David. In the States, Richie, children receive up to 70 vaccines by the time they're 18. We are clearly playing at it over here, says David. That rings a bell, David. Yes, I do remember somebody telling me one time that they really go for it in America. Hello to Joe. Hello, Joe. In primary schools, they have dental nurses coming in and painting fluoride on children's teeth. Now, Joe, hang on. This is the first I've heard of this. Prove it to me. Send me a link, Joe. By the way, Joe, I think you'll know I'm not calling you a liar. Of course I'm not. I want some proof here. Are you kidding me? Primary schools have nurses coming in and painting fluoride on the teeth of children. Where is this happening? Where's the outcry? I want to know, Joe. Let me know. Chris Morell says, Richie, as I understand it, part of the feud, come on, Chris, I don't care about feuds in the truth or industrial complex. But he says, Judy Mikovits, we like Judy. Judy's been on this program. And she's had a run-in with Anthony Fauci, apparently. And it concerns her heavy suspicion that ME, myeloencephalitis, I think that's what it stands for, chronic fatigue, is caused by ingredients derived from mice in certain vaccines. Mice, adjuvants, says Chris, in the COVID jab, could well be having the same effect. Thank you. Screech says, Richie, Bernie was worried about being vaccinated in a future life. Well, I've no idea what this life is all about. I like the idea the life is a test. So those of us who resist will be safe in the next life or simulation or whatever we are. If you stand up to it here and have a go, it might be better next time around. I don't know. Robert says, Richie, regarding your interview with Rob and his decision, along with his wife, to refuse more jabs for the child and the implications of the threat to raise the issue with the safeguarding team, it gives me an eerie indication of what they're trying to do, similar to what happens in America with child services, where they have been implicated children or trafficking, says Rob. Rob, you need to read that back before you send it. I kind of get what you're saying there, but not entirely. But thank you. Yes, I get what you're saying. It's the implication is, and Rob said he felt it himself, that, you know, they might get child protective services involved. You know, the non-two subtle threat there, if you don't bring in the young baby. I get you. Hello to Beth, who says, Informed Consent Matters is a very good website on all things vaccination. It's a good resource for parents. Thank you so much, Beth. Really appreciate it. Bill says, study about vaccines in childhood has already been done, Richie. It's called The Amish Community. Yes, Bill, I get that. I understand that. The Amish do not vaccinate. Their children are supposedly healthier. I get that. But we like a controlled study just to double down on the proof. We know. We know the kids who haven't had them are healthier. We know that. You're right, 100%. Julia says, Richie, Dr. Paul Thomas, a paediatrician with a large practice, did a vax-no-vax study, published the results and lost his licence. That is the man I interviewed. That is the man I interviewed. Thank you, Julia. That's the guy. Some years ago, came on with me. That's right. And he wanted the government to undertake a proper study. 100%. Very good. Steph says, by the way, the show on Sunday, it's not a request show. I won't be taking any requests. I'll be producing the show on Saturday, so taking out the music. No requests, so piss off, Seamus. Thank you. People, the cheek of some people, eh? My tongue is in my cheek, by the way. My tongue is firmly pressed to the inside of my left cheek. There you are. Okie doke. So that's about it for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for Rob, to Rob for coming on, taking an early bath. It's been a long bloody day, long week. 5 podcasts a week, 4 live radio shows, and a 5th on Sunday. I'm taking my leave of you. What I'm going to do actually is quickly turn the programme around, get it online, and then the BBG is heading to the Salford Community Stadium for the Rugby League later on. That is what I'm going to do. Listen, enjoy your weekend. As I have already said, there will be a St. Patrick's Day special this Sunday morning between 10 and noon. I'm really looking forward to that. Going to have a good go at it over the weekend. The next time you hear me, but before that, there will be a Papers podcast tomorrow morning. The Richie Allen Show will return. Of course, it will return this coming Monday at 4 o'clock UK time. Thank you. Closing out today with, please God, I've dug out the right song, have I? Oh, no, I haven't. Jesus, Mother. Jesus, Mary, and Holy Saint Joseph. I could close out with that, to be honest, if I really wanted to, but I won't do that at all. Going to close out with this from Steve Winwood, the great Steve Winwood. All right, then. Thanks for listening this week. Thanks for supporting the radio show. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Bye now. Speak soon. Bye.